music of the Barred Owls on Current State. We'll visit with them later on in the program. I'm Scott Westerman, sitting in for Mark Bayshore. Back in 1977, my friend Mike Dyer gave me my first inspirational audio cassette. It was entitled 20 Minutes That Can Change Your Life. The sonorous voice of Earl Nightingale pontificated about the power of the mind and how a positive attitude was the key attribute of a successful life. That was the beginning of a three-decade love affair with self-help. Over time, I amassed a huge library of audio programs, books, posters, and accessories, all focused on making me a better person. Well, what's it like to have grown up in a family where self-help is truly a way of life? Jessica Lamb Shapiro did just that, and she writes about it in her fascinating book, Promised Land, My Journey Through America's Self-Help Culture. Jessica joins us by phone this morning. Welcome to Current State, Jessica.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
What was the first self-help maxim you remember learning?
Oh, my dad used to say this to me every single morning from when I was so young. He would say, remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life.
That had to drive you crazy at some point, I bet.
Oh, it drove me crazy so quickly. I mean, it became funny after a while, and, you know, years and years went by, and I couldn't even tell if he was joking or teasing me or he really meant it.
So your father was the self-help guru. He was in the industry?
Yes, he was. He was a child psychologist who also wrote parenting books. So he had written about 40 books before I started looking into the self-help culture.
And it was a daddy-daughter love affair, so I guess you probably traveled with him some of the places where he went.
Yeah, he was almost like a traveling salesman part of the time because he also had a catalog that sold, affirmational calendars and cooperative games and sort of things related to self-help that were not self-help books. And we used to go around to fairs where there were psychologists and try to sell the products. And you know how it is when you're a kid, you think that everything your family does is normal. So it wasn't until I was in high school and college that I started to realize that everybody's father didn't take them around and sell aspirational games.
What was that turning point? Was there a watershed moment when you realized that your life was a little different?
Well, it actually happened maybe even earlier than that, because kids would come over to my house, and instead of regular toys, I would have handicap dolls because they were used for helping kids who had handicaps. And, I mean, such a nice thing. But also other kids just had regular toys. So kids would come over, and they would see our cooperative games, which are games where nobody wins unless everybody wins, which basically means that they're not fun and nobody wins. And I would try to make them play these games, and they would just be so bored, and they would be like, don't you have Monopoly? And unfortunately, you know, I didn't, so they were pretty disappointed.
So it was a lot like Michelle Obama said last week, the kids in your house wanted to get out and go visit the friends as quickly as they could because it was much more fun. Is that what you're saying?
And I did too. I just wanted to go play video games, you know.
So what made you decide to write the book?
Well, it's funny because I was so immersed in self-help culture, it was pretty boring to me. I mean, I wasn't really interested in it. And then about 10 years ago, my dad mentioned that he was going to a conference that was led by the guy who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And I asked him why, because he had written so many books, and none of them had been hugely successful. But, you know, some of them were published by major publishers, and he self-published a lot of the books, and he seemed like he really knew what he was doing. But he seemed to think that there was some secret that he could learn where he could have a bigger career, more like Dr. Phil or Mark Victor Hansen, who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. So he was going to this conference with the hopes that he could learn the secret, whatever it was. And I was just so surprised and kind of fascinated that he would want to do this, you know, given that he was smart, educated. He'd written so many books. I couldn't imagine what he would possibly learn. And I was also really fascinated that there was a workshop where people were learning to write self-help books. That just seemed so strange to me. And it made me think of the scope of the whole industry, you know, not just how many people read it, but how many people actually want to write it, that I just thought, I have to go and see this. It's going to be really weird. And so that's kind of how the whole book started.
I've always wondered what makes someone think they can become an expert on self-help. What do you think that is?
Nothing. I mean, basically, the amazing thing about self-help is it's you don't need a degree. There is no qualification process. So pretty much if you've had an experience, you are qualified to write about that experience, which in one sense is a great democratic thing. But on another hand, is a little bit nervous-making because, you know, you're giving advice to lots of people who might take it very, very seriously. And that advice, you know, depending on the person, could be more or less useful, or more or less crazy.
You had a life-changing experience very early on in your life. Tell us that story.
Well, my mother died when I was right before my second birthday. And ironically, even though my father was a psychologist, we really didn't talk about it. I think it just speaks to how difficult it is to talk about death. And in this particular case, my mother had committed suicide. So that was, you know, another layer that made it really difficult to talk about. So that affected me very much, although I really wasn't aware of it until I started, you know, how much and in what ways until I started writing this book.
And, you know, many second-generation kids whose parents commit suicide have that same fear that there will be some switch that will flip in their lives and cause them to want to do the same thing. Did that happen to you?
It did. And, you know, I actually sort of believe that it might be true because I didn't know what you just said, that a lot of, you know, this happens to a lot of people. And that was one of the ways in which reading through a lot of self-help books really helped me while I was working on this book. I read a book called Motherless Daughters about women whose mothers had died, and they mentioned that 90% of women whose mothers killed themselves think that the same thing will happen to them. And as soon as I read that, it was really transformational because I just realized it was just a common fear, and that meant that it wasn't necessarily a premonition or something that really was going to happen. And I experienced a great deal of relief just from getting that information.
Is that part of the appeal of self-help, that we have this common fear about being worthy?
I think it's a common fear about being worthy, about being alone. I mean, one of the things that self-help offers us is a community, especially, you know, now we have the internet and there's a virtual community, and I think it offers much of the same thing. But before that, if you had a problem that you felt was particularly isolating, something like, you know, your mother committed suicide, it's very isolating because I grew up not knowing anybody else who had been in that situation. And so that made me feel like I was really alone in a sense. And so if you can discover a community of other people through a book, that can be a really profound experience.
So it was actually a self-help book that helped you start to come out from under that dark cloud.
It was. I'm loath to admit it, but it really was.
You know, self-help has its upsides and downsides, especially from a political perspective, because it's considered almost kind of a conservative ethic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting thing because I think that self-help, in a way, people think of New Age and the sort of flakiness, and that's a little bit associated with liberals. But as I started to read self-help books, and especially older self-help books, the basic message is you can do it. You can do it on your own, and you don't need anyone else. And in one sense, that's extremely empowering. It's a wonderful thing that you can, you on your own are capable of achieving anything, and that's something that we really, really hold dear in this culture. On the other hand, that's also a great responsibility for every individual. And if you find yourself in a situation where perhaps you're weakened, or for some reason you can't achieve anything, then there's sort of a expectation like that nobody's going to help you. Because if we're all capable of achieving things on our own and we don't need anybody else, then really there's no one to come to your rescue if you do happen to need other people.
You know, you've read and studied so much in this whole industry. If you were to distill the meaningful self-help maxims into a few paragraphs, what would they be?
Oh my gosh, that's a really difficult question. you know, self-help is so interesting because it runs such a huge gamut. I mean, there's self-help about weight loss, and there's inspirational self-help, and there's self-help about parenting and finding relationships and grieving. And so in a sense, you know, it's hard to kind of come up with just a few things that they all hold in common. But certainly one thing that I think it provides is that we're not alone. I mean, that's sort of the most basic concept of self-help, is that if you're, you know, wanting to lose weight, or you're wanting to get married, or you have some loss that you need to grieve, there is a community of other people through books and, you know, also in your community where you can get help. And just the fact that help exists is a really nice thing.
And the courage to be able to ask for help, that sounds to me like a very important fundamental of this whole adventure.
It is, and I think that self-help books to some extent interfere with that because, you know, there's a way in which when you get a self-help book, you're sort of reaching out, but you're reaching out in a very isolating way. I mean, you're basically still by yourself. Now you just have a book. And I think that in some cases, perhaps many cases, that takes the place of actually reaching out to another human being. And I think that ultimately reaching out to another person, being in a room with a person, is the best help that we can avail ourselves of. So, you know, it troubles me that, you know, in many cases people might reach to a book when they could actually make contact with another person, and that might be more helpful.
You know, Admiral Jim Stockdale is one of my personal heroes, the longest-serving prisoner, highest-ranking prisoner at the Hanoi Hilton, and his Stockdale paradox is something Jim Collins talks about in the book Good to Great. And that's, you know, basically suck it up and deal with the most unpleasant things of your current reality without losing faith that you will ultimately prevail. Does that make sense to you?
I think suck it up and deal is a little bit harsh. Is that exactly what he says?
Well, I mean, that's a distillation. He said deal with the most unpleasant current realities that you have. And that's what, you know, there was no, you know, sense that he was ever going to get out of that prison. So he had to figure out how to exist and how to have the most meaningful life he could in that place as a leader of men from solitary confinement.
No, I do. I think that's a really nice sentiment. I do agree with that.
Very good. Excellent. Well, it's wonderful to have you on the show today, Jessica. It's a book that I really loved. Reading from cover to cover, and I devoured it the minute I knew that I was going to be on this show. If there is one or two messages that you would like the readers of that book to take away, what would it be? Did we lose her? We lost her. That happens on programs like these. Jessica Lamb Shapiro wrote The Promised Land, My Journey Through American Self-Help Culture, available in print and on your favorite digital literature application. And based upon what I've read from that book, I'm thinking that she says that there is hope, and there is hope in community. We have one another. We can figure out a way to make things okay. Her website is promisedlandbook.com. Jess, thanks for being with us on Current State.